Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Preston Lee, the founder of Millo.co, a blog community and phenomenal resource hub for all things freelancing. Preston and I are also the co-hosts of another podcast together called The Side Gig Show, along with Ian Padgett, where we take turns diving deep into the tactics, strategies, ups, downs, and decisions we've made that have helped us grow our own side businesses over the past few years. But for now, back to Preston, who we actually had on the show last year to talk about how to book podcast sponsorships, just after he left his day job to focus full-time on growing Millo. And fast forwarding to today, Preston's now got a well-oiled online business built around what originally started as just his personal blog. He now sells digital products, has several podcasts that attract great sponsors, books blog sponsorships, and recently launched a curated weekly newsletter called Solid Gigs that I highly recommend, where he surfaces only the top 1% of freelance and remote jobs his team has found online over the past week. So go check out Solid Gigs, please. It's totally worth it if you're a freelancer and you're looking for more gigs today. In this episode, Preston and I talk about how he got his first blog sponsorships and the process he's used to regularly bring on five-figure sponsorship deals every month since then. We cover the distribution of his blogging income, including how he tests out new potential monetization strategies and then works to scale them after they show positive signs of growth potential. We dig into how Preston drives traffic to his website, which strategies are working best today, how he decides which topics to write about, building a remote team around his blog, and so much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Preston Lee. Preston, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Ryan. Happy to be here, man.
We are here to talk today about something very specific, blogging. And one of the things that you guys over at Millo have done particularly well over the past few years, which is landing sponsorships. But real quick, can you actually rewind the clock for us and tell us about when you first launched your blog? Set the stage.
Yeah, absolutely. It was 2008, 2009. So I guess it's been almost 10 years now. And I was watching people that I really admired online, like Chris Spooner and Jacob Cass and some of these guys at the time doing design blogs. And Millo started as a graphic design blog. We actually had the URL graphicdesignblender.com. So it was very much a design blog when we started. And it started as sort of just an experiment. Like I was in college and I was finishing up my studies and I was learning a lot about online communication and that sort of thing. And this was just like a fun experiment, but also I saw on some of these blogs, you know, you have to remember what the blogging landscape looked like in 2009, but I saw on some of these blogs, they had like their buy, sell ads, placeholders that said advertise here or whatever. And so I would see that some of these bloggers had like a few spaces available for like $100 a pop or $50 a pop or something. And I started like adding it up and realizing these guys were probably making $500 to $1,000 a month, which, you know, in my mind as a college student and in this new medium in blogging, I was like, wow, if I could make an extra $1,000 a month or something from just writing. I remember telling my dad, I was like, hey, guess what? I can just write things on the internet and then people will like buy this little slot next to what I write and they'll actually pay money to be next to it and I get paid to write. Yeah. So I was super pumped about it. And that's kind of how it all started. But I'd say it was more hobby or experimentation and learning and just being sort of interested in that than like starting, you know, a business per se.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, to kind of tie this into a lot of the themes that I like talking about. I remember on the first episode of my podcast, you shared a story where you were sitting in a hotel room writing for your blog at a time when everyone else was like out having dinner or drinks or something. And so it just kind of brought it home to, you know, this is a side project. So when did you kind of like switch over to taking it so seriously, or was it always something you took seriously?
It was always something that like I wanted it to be more than it was, you know what I mean? But in the meantime, I got married, I had a kid, I graduated from college. And so like life became very real. I suddenly like had a lot of bills to pay and just a lot of responsibility. And And so I, you know, at that time I was making maybe a few hundred bucks a month from the blog, but I feel like in retrospect, like I maybe wouldn't have admitted it then, but now I certainly see I was probably spending more time just like on Twitter and like maybe writing posts every once in a while, but really like I wasn't taking it as seriously as I could have. The turning point was really when I got a job that required me to commute on a train. And I think I've told you this story before too, Ryan, but I had to commute like 40 minutes one way. So every day I had 80 minutes where, you know, the train had Wi-Fi, there was a desk, I plugged in my laptop, and I basically could just hustle for those 40 minutes twice a day. And that's when I started taking it seriously, because I had to say like, okay, what am I going to do in this 40 minutes to actually make an impact so that in 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, whenever, I can leave my job and do this thing full time. And that's when it started to sort of feel real in my mind that this could actually be something I could do full time.
Yeah. And eventually you ended up pivoting from being just kind of a graphic design blog over to the site's name now, Millo.co. So yes. What kind of motivated that shift?
Yeah. You know, we started way in the beginning. I was the only one writing for the site. So I was writing about design and I was writing about inspiration and just anything. I mean, for anyone familiar with a design blog, they know what that looks like. Like it's inspiration, it's trends, it's just galleries and like all graphic design. Well, I started to realize that I didn't enjoy that stuff as much and it didn't resonate as much as when I would write about, for example, finding new clients or raising your rates or like all these things that are sort of the freelancing side of design, because there's this whole business side of design. And so I quickly pivoted to talk to designers about business. I was better at that. I was more passionate about that. It resonated more. And then as I started talking about freelancing and business and solopreneurship and all of that sort of thing, more people, other people, different people than just designers started to notice, you know, they recognized that we were providing value and they found our content in multiple ways. And so then illustrators are showing up, writers are showing up, marketers are showing up, all sorts of people are showing up. And we have this blog called Graphic Design Blender. And it just was this weird like disconnect between what we were actually doing and what we called ourselves. And so we wanted to rebrand to something that could change again if it needed to, something that wasn't like attached to a discipline or anything like that. And that's it was 2015. So, you know, we were 6 years into that domain and into that brand. And so it was a pretty major pivot for us, but it's been great so far.
I think this is actually a super important lesson to people watching, listening, because this is something where, you know, when you start your blog, you think, oh my God, I'm committed to this topic forever, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And no, you don't really have to be. You can always change and I think the best changes, the best evolutions happen from your audience, right? Like this was made in communication with the people that were coming to your site and adapting to what they wanted more of too.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think people can also get hung up and not even start, right? Because they're so worried that they're going to pick the wrong niche or whatever. It doesn't matter as much as you maybe think it does down the road.
I like it. So let's talk about going down that road. So fast forwarding a bit now, how much would you say on average Millo typically generates in a given month?
Yeah. So right now we fluctuate quite a bit month to month, depending on sponsorships, which we're going to get a little deeper into later. But I can tell you exactly on average what we make, what we made in the last 12 months is about $8,200. So a little over $8,000 a month is like the steady, predictable. We know next month we're probably going to make, you know, somewhere in that range.
Awesome. And what distribution of that comes from blog sponsorships, podcast sponsorships, typically?
Yeah, the two biggest chunks that we have for sure are subscriptions and product sales, and then sponsorships. Let me pull it up, Ryan, because I want to give you an accurate number here. So, sponsorship revenue this year, so over the last, well, since January, it's September now. So is at 40%. So 40% of our revenue comes from sponsorships right now. Last year, it was much higher. That's because this over the last 12 months, we introduced a subscription product that's been pretty successful. So it's taken part of that percentage, you know, but yeah, 40%. So almost half.
Yeah. It's cool to see the evolution too of your business and like the income distribution grow in different ways too, right? Like the goal is always diversification.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And there was a while there where I only did sponsorships, mostly because it was a side hustle. And so, you know, limited time, limited resources or whatever. And it was scary sometimes because if people stop buying sponsorships, you're out of business. And I have, you know, a team I need to pay and, other expenses, obviously, with running a business. So it can be scary if you don't diversify, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I do want to dig into the sponsorship process for a little bit at least. And then we can touch on also kind of your subscription business and other things that you're working on too, towards the end of the show. But I know that building a subscription-based business can be like such a black box, especially to people who've never done it before, right? Like, how do you find sponsors? What do you tell them? How do you get them on the phone? How do you get them to actually hand over their money for an ad on your site? So, you know, looking back at some of your earlier sponsorship deals, maybe, you know, the first memorable one that comes to mind for you, who were some of the early sponsors of your blog?
Yeah. And I think just to clarify, Ryan, you actually said a subscription business, but just to clarify for listeners, we're going to be talking about a sponsorship based business, right? So, it's funny because the whole, like I told you that story about me, like being so excited to tell my dad, who, by the way, I think was like, kind of patted me on the head. I would have too, when I said, look, I can just sell advertising and I can write whatever I want and people will pay to be right next to it. But that in essence is a sponsorship. I mean, I think it started like my interest in that sort of business model, call it advertising, call it sponsorships, all started, you know, clear back at the beginning. And really, if I'm being 100% honest, for those who are especially interested in sponsorship models, sponsorships is, in my opinion, just a fancier word for advertising, right? In a lot of ways, I can actually charge more for a sponsorship than I can for an ad, but it's also a better experience for my audience, and it's also a better experience for the sponsor. So it's a win, it's a triple win. My audience wins because the content is better, the integration is better. The sponsor wins because it's a closer tie with the audience, and obviously we win because we can charge more for it and execute better on it. I don't remember where I was going with that, so you might have to re-ask your question, Ryan.
Who was the first memorable sponsor?
There we go, thank you. I knew we were headed somewhere, sorry. So the first sponsor we had that I would say was really significant and that I would say was not like just ads, but was a truly integrated sponsor, was Design Cuts. And again, this was back, we were still primarily a design blog, and so it made the most sense to do that. But Tom Ross, one of the most talented guys I know, super nice guy. He runs a company called Design Cuts. They offer like highly discounted deals, design templates and icons and other sort of just graphics for designers and that sort of thing. But they were the first, and they stuck with us for a few years too, and really supported a lot of our foundational work to be able to continue in sponsorships and content creation and all of that sort of thing. So I owe a ton to Ross and Design, or Tom Ross at Design Cuts.
Do you remember how you first landed that deal? Was he like a friend? Was he a fellow blogger you hit up? What was that kind of process like?
He actually reached out to me. Interestingly enough. So I had been pitching. Yeah, absolutely. I had been pitching advertising and sponsorships, basically the same thing to other, you know, advertisers and sponsors. I've been doing that a little bit. But really, this was the first like big deal we had. And Tom reached out to me. He had reached out to a few other bloggers as well and was doing the same thing. I think he may have, this is just a guess, I should ask him if he remembers, but I think he may have found me through the Fizzle community. We were both members of the Fizzle community by Corbett Barr and Chase Reeves. And so he may have found me there. I'm trying to recall. I don't think he ever said, but.
How about today? What does your sponsorship process look like? So, you know, do you personally identify sponsors or are you like solely inbound leads now?
Definitely not solely inbound leads. That would be a dream. You know, you and I have a friend, Ian Padgett, who he doesn't do sponsorships as much, but he does a ton of logo design and he gets just like bombarded with inbound leads. And I'm really jealous of that. There's a real art and science to that and he's really fantastic at it. But most of our sponsorships are still outbound. We get a fair amount of, I would say the inbound stuff is smaller, I guess is maybe the distinction. Like the inbound stuff is one or two episodes of a podcast or, you know, a partially dedicated newsletter or a banner and a sponsored post or something a little bit more small. The bigger packages, which really is what drives our revenue the fastest, obviously, are, usually through outreach and through connections that I have. And so I still do most of the outreach for those bigger deals. You know, if we want a full season sponsor for a podcast, for example, I'll reach out to a few people who have done it in the past or who I'm familiar with, or I'll just reach out. I've made a lot of progress with just cold emails and friendly cold emails, but well-crafted, well-thought-out cold emails to companies who I feel like are who complement our mission well, or who have the same mission we do to improve the lives of freelancers and solopreneurs. And and actually, I think you were a sponsor when you worked at Creative Live. Creative Live was a sponsor of Millo for a while. I don't remember how we got connected, but it comes in all sorts. Like, I wish there was one way that I could say, do this thing and then this thing and then you'll have a sponsor. But it feels like every time, still today, it's different every single time.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I actually can't believe I haven't told you this story before of how I found your blog originally. This was when you were still Graphic Design Blender.
Yeah.
But I was working, so I did the content marketing for mostly the business classes, but I was helping out with the design classes too.
Okay. And
like our design content person who did like more of the writing, just like happened to refer your blog over my way and just like, hey, check out their content. They rank for some good design keywords. And then I saw like ads all over the place and like I was on the email list and I saw like a dedicated email. And I was like, whoa, this looks like a community we should advertise. So it was kind of a referral, but kind of a combination of things, I guess.
Killer. That's awesome. Yeah. So I mean, and it's like, how do you replicate that? Right? Like, I wish you I could have a conversation where we could say to bloggers, if you want sponsorships, just do this thing where a coworker refers it to, you know, someone like Ryan who recognizes the value in the community, who helps craft a sponsorship that's valuable. And I mean, it's so hard to just like give a cookie cutter sort of outline of it. But I think that's what makes the model so great. And that's because I've also worked really closely. In fact, I worked at a tech startup whose focus was entirely around dynamic ads, like through Google servers. And I won't get into all the weeds, but it was basically, it was display ads. And that business was so like shallow in terms of the connection between the advertiser and the publisher. It was impossible to build any sort of relationship. And on a per page view basis, all these bloggers were wondering, like, how do I improve my per page view revenue? And I started calculating Millo's per page view revenue for sponsorships instead of display advertising or whatever. And it was I don't even remember, like 60 times the amount, because I had built relationships with potential sponsors. We had delivered sponsorships that were really integrated, really genuine. They still drove results. And at the same time, we weren't spamming our audience with just like banner, you know?
Yeah. So today then, do you personally, like when you're reaching out to sponsors, you said you still do a lot of the outreach yourself.
Yeah.
How do you identify potential companies that might be a good fit? You know, like, because I know there's also a difference between companies that want to reach more freelancers, but companies that can afford to advertise to reach more freelancers.
Yes, totally. And I'd say anyone interested in a sponsorship model has to understand that there's always going to be that that percentage of companies who can do it. And then there's a much larger percentage of companies who won't or can't do it. And you just have to understand when, especially if you're doing cold outreach, you just have to understand that, like, you know, 1 in 10 is really good. Like if you could nail 1 in 10 companies that you reach out to, I'm saying like without any previous connection or anything like that. If you can get 1 or 2 of those out of 10, like that would be incredible. It's going to be more like 1 out of 25 or 50 to get a really good sponsorship deal. And so not to say you can't, there's no other benefits, right? Like you can still build relationships with those people. Maybe you can swap content or something else. But if you're solely looking at the return on your investment for sponsorships, that can be really tough. And so I've gone and forgotten. I'm rambling, Ryan. I've gone and forgotten your question again. My goodness.
How do you personally identify the right kinds of companies?
Thank you. You can cut out all my forgetting. I know you won't, but I wish you would. Me forgetting everything. So I have a few different ways that I do it. Some of the most basic ways are like listening, for example, for our podcasts. I'll have me and my team listen to other podcasts in our field and just see who's sponsoring episodes on those podcasts. And then we call up those companies and we just say, hey, we know you advertised on this show. We have a similar audience. We get this kind of engagement. Here are some other sponsors we've worked with in the past, you know, some big name sponsors who have trusted us with sponsorship. We'd love to do a sponsorship with you. Some of them will come back and say, you know, let's do a test. Let's do 3 episodes instead of a full season or something. But that's one way. Another way is honestly, I just like go on Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn and I'll type in like in quotations. So we serve freelancers. Our goal is to make the lives of freelancers and solopreneurs better. So I'll type in quotation marks for freelancers or for solopreneurs or for small businesses. And then all of these companies will come up who in their bio, they've said, you know, we do accounting for freelancers or we do project management for freelancers. Anyone who's working for freelancers potentially could be a partner or a sponsor. I would say those are less likely sometimes because they're not already sponsoring other, you know, podcasts or blogs or anything like that. So that can be a little more difficult. But I would say there's also an opportunity there because sometimes they don't know that it's even a thing they can be doing. And so some of these smaller companies I'll reach out to and I'll sort of almost take on a marketing role for them and help them understand what value they can get out of partnering with us and our community. So that's another way. Those are probably the two biggest ways that I find new potential sponsors. Every once in a while, you know, someone will reach out and they want a guest blog on the site. And I'll say, well, instead of guest blogging, what would really probably make more sense for you would be if we did like a sponsorship bundle where, you know, because what they really want is like some extra attention or they don't really want to contribute to the community through writing. They really want right. attention from the community for their business. So that's maybe a third way that we do that.
That's smart. And I'm glad you also mentioned too, like just digging sort of into that idea of like some of the companies that you want to reach out to don't necessarily know about what podcast advertisements can do yeah. for them or what yeah. blog post email advertisements can do for them, right? So there's that education component where every now and then you may spend some time having to like really pitch it or versus like saying, hey, here's my listenership numbers, here's my email list numbers, here's the engagement.
Yes, totally. And I'd say that's the other benefit of doing sponsorships versus just advertising. With just advertising, you sort of put this script on your site and like the advertising, you know, I guess, what am I trying to say? Like the intermediary.
Ad network.
Yeah, the ad network. Thank you. They control all the data about how the ads perform and they give a little bit of that to you as a publisher, but usually they keep most of that to themselves and to the advertiser. And so you don't really know like what's performing well, what's not performing well. What we do with our sponsors is we're basically partners the whole way. And we'll say, you know, let us know how this campaign did. If it didn't do so well, we could throw a little more, you know, fuel on the fire without any extra charge to you. Like we're really dedicated to making sure that the campaigns are successful.
That's super important.
We'll even say like, hey, you know, they'll suggest something for a dedicated email, for example. And we'll say, that's really not going to resonate with our audience. I mean, if you really want to resonate with our audience, here's what it should look like. And we're happy to write this up for you or draw out an outline or something and your team can write it. But that's what I love about sponsorships is you can really, as a marketing person myself, someone who loves online marketing, like I can actually talk to them about what's actually going to work versus, you know, just what's going to feel spammy and not bring results for any of us. It's going to be detrimental for all of us involved. So.
Yeah. I love that. It's a service.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Taking the next step in this very linear progression, I'm super linear. once you've identified companies that you want to reach out to, do you like throw them all into a spreadsheet? How do you find the person that you reach out to?
Yeah, so there's a few different ways to do this. My favorite currently is a Chrome extension called Hunter. I think it's at hunter.io. And basically, you know, to continue the process, let's say I get on Twitter, I search quotations for freelancers. I find some company that says we do accounting for freelancers. I click on their link in their bio. I go to their website. And on their website, I can click the Hunter extension in my Chrome bar. And it will give me a dropdown where it says, here's the most likely, it uses like AI to basically comb the site, find email addresses and find the most likely structure for any name. And it'll also have some known email addresses. So like some, if you're really lucky, it'll say like Ryan Robinson, CEO, or or whatever right in the dropdown, if it doesn't have the right position or person that you're looking for, what I then do is I go, and this is kind of a roundabout way, but I've found for me it's the best way. I then go to LinkedIn and I'll search that company. You can, on LinkedIn, you can look at a company, all of the employees who have self-identified as employees of a particular company. So I would go to this accounting company on LinkedIn. I would say, you know, view all 12 employees. I would click that link and then I would search. You can search by position. So if you do an advanced search, you can type like partnerships or marketing or promotions or something. So I can find the person at that company who's in charge of, if they do it, who's in charge of like partnerships and promotions. And a lot of times there'll be like 90% of the time there's a marketing person at least, right? And so even if they don't do sponsorships right now, their job still as a marketing person is to, you know, make people aware of their product and their service. So I'll go to LinkedIn, I'll find their names, and then I come back to the website and I'll type in their name in the Hunter extension. It'll say this person's most likely email address is, you know, rrobinson@accountingforfreelancers.com or whatever. So, and then a lot of times I'll take like a few email addresses. Here's something I haven't really shared before. I'll take a few email addresses and then I'll send an email. Again, very friendly, not a template, not spammy. I can't stress that enough. I'll take a few email addresses and then I'll just say like bluntly right in the email, I'll say, I'm so sorry for the shotgun approach. I wasn't sure exactly who to talk to about this. But if a coworker sees, picture yourself back at your 9-to-5 job, and you, let's say you see your name and your CEO's name in a subject line. How likely are you to open that email, right? Super, super likely to open and respond to that email too. Because, what's that?
And to respond, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because otherwise the CEO's stuck responding, right? Or your coworker or whatever. So I'll find like a couple marketing people and maybe someone that looks like they can maybe be above the marketing people, working with the marketing people. Depending on the size of the company, I'll do 2 or 3 different email addresses. And then I'll just say, hey, I'm sorry for the shotgun approach. I wasn't sure who to talk to. I'd love to chat about partnerships or sponsorships. It seems like, you know, we're serving the same audience. We have a similar mission. I think we could really find some synergy here. Who would be the best person to talk to? And I always end with a question. So if I end with a question, they feel compelled to answer, right? And it's not usually not a yes or no. It's not like, would you like to chat? Sometimes I'll do that, but would you like to chat is very easy to like just delete, right? But are you the right person to talk to? I can at least get a no, I'm not. And then I have somewhere to go from there. I have my foot in the door and I can say, oh, well, thanks so much for the response. Who's the right person to talk to? But that's basically the whole process from not having any company at all to talk to actually getting in contact with someone who potentially makes the decision on partnerships or sponsorships at that particular company.
What kinds of value props do sponsors care most about, right? And I want to frame this too for people who are maybe a little earlier on in their blogging journey. So they don't yet have hundreds of thousands of monthly views. They don't have a huge email list. How do you kind of convince a sponsor that it's worth their money to do a sponsorship with you?
Well, I think first you have to believe that it is. So I don't care how good a marketer you are. You can only convince a sponsor once that it's a good idea if it's not actually a good idea. You know what I mean? And even convincing them once, if you're not convinced yourself internally, it's still pretty hard. Even the best salesman, I would say most bloggers probably aren't salesmen. And so I would say that's the added benefit that you have is like actually believing in what you're proposing and also being willing to like go the extra mile to deliver what you say you're going to deliver. And because that's what sponsors are looking for. There are what I wish there were more of in the world, honestly, are the kinds of sponsors that like NASCAR gets, right? Where like Cheerios goes on the side of a car and they have absolutely no way of knowing how many boxes of Cheerios they sell because they put the logo on the side of a NASCAR. Like they have no clue. They have so much money and such a big marketing budget that they have to spend that they decide to sponsor the NASCAR, any particular car, right? We see that all the time out in, I guess, like the big world. We see that everywhere. You know, you see like on American Idol, there'll be like logos on the cups and we just see it all over the place. And so we can tend to think sponsorships should be that way on our blog too. Like, oh, this company should just want some great brand exposure, or should just want to get in front of this big audience, or even just this small audience that I have. But a lot of times, even though we call it sponsorships, a lot of times they still track a sponsorship based on advertising metrics, like return on how many clicks are they going to get? How much traffic are they going to get? How many conversions are they going to get out of it? And are they going to make a positive return on their investment? So that's what sponsors, at least the ones I've worked with, if someone knows out there, like a magical place where they just slap a logo on the side of a car, that version, but for bloggers, I'd love to know. But in my experience, what they're looking for are solid metrics that you can promise and fulfill on, and that you're willing to work hard to fulfill on. And if they can sense that you're actually committed to that, they'll be more likely to spend with you.
How do you go about then, you know, setting your sponsorship prices? And I know this is such a loaded question with a million different possible answers and directions they could go in, but like just, you know, general advice, someone who's just getting started, you know, how do you price your sponsorships?
Yeah, so hard to know. You can research forever and figure out, you know, cost per thousand. Like some people will charge a sponsorship on a cost per thousand CPM basis, where it's like, well, you know, industry average, quote unquote, is like, you know, $45 cost per thousand for a dedicated newsletter or something. But you'll find such varying numbers that can be frustrating. And you'll find that quote unquote industry average, in my experience, is lower than what you can actually get. And what industry average is for is for like marketplaces. Again, if you're selling banners or if you're selling dedicated emails or sponsored posts on your blog or anything like that through a marketplace, you'll probably get closer to those lower industry averages. If you reach out personally, you offer a very personalized, tailored, genuine approach, I have found you can get quite a bit more than what people would call industry average. And so, but the hard part is when you're trying to find the right price, especially like you said in the beginning, you kind of have nowhere to start from. And I think maybe the best advice I can offer right now for that, and it's a little bit hard to like remember back, right? Remember before I like selling my first sponsorship. Mm-hmm. I would say there are a couple different ways you could take it. Honestly, you could just ask them like what their budget would be, right? And you might not get as much as you wanted the first time around, but you're learning how sponsorships work. You're delivering a sponsorship successfully so that the next time you go to a sponsor, you can say, we did this sponsorship for so-and-so and they made, you know, 20% back on their investment with us or whatever. And so I think there's a lot of benefit.
A testimonial out of it even.
Yes, absolutely. There's so much benefit to just doing it and not getting so hung up on, am I making enough money this time around? Again, it's kind of like we talked about earlier, right? Like picking your niche. If you get so hung up on whether you're picking the right niche or whatever, you may never get far enough down the road to even make a difference. It's the same with sponsorships. If you get so hung up on, am I picking the right price? You may never get to the point where you can raise your prices or where you can actually figure out the right price. I would say maybe the answer, you know, a little bit more developed, meaning if you're really serious about sponsorships, maybe it's not your first one, maybe you've done a few here and there, or you've done some ad deals or whatever, and you really want to get serious about it, I would say the easiest way to quickly find out what you should be charging is to just ask the market, meaning send 50 cold emails, eventually get to the price conversation with them. I don't know if I'd include it right up front, but eventually get to the price conversation. And if people are flat out rejecting you, like they just can't even fathom paying that amount of money for what you're offering, then it's too high. And if people are agreeing like readily and you have more sponsors than you know what to do with, then it's too low. And so you got to figure out somewhere in the middle that makes sense where you can get quality sponsors at a decent price, not have too many of them, because that also presents a problem for your audience, particularly having too many sponsorships running at once. It starts to feel more like ads and less like a genuine experience. And so, yeah, I'd say the more people you can talk to and test pricing with, the quicker you'll find out what that magic number looks like.
That is a beautiful, perfect answer to a crazy difficult question.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
All right, President, well, we're getting close to the end of our interview here, but I want to ask you a couple of questions around how you guys get readers, drive traffic to your blog, because this is something that I also think you do very well. I look to a lot of the ways you've done this in the past. But, you know, ballpark figure these days, what are you typically seeing as far as number of readers per month?
We're seeing probably about 100 to 120,000 a month, depending on the time of year and that sort of thing.
And what are like the biggest sources for you?
Yeah, so the biggest sources are definitely search, which we are investing a ton in right now. Inspired a lot by you, Ryan. I know you do a great job with search, and by some other folks that I've been following as well, Matt Giovannisi and some other guys. And then aside from that, our newsletter drives a bunch of traffic, but by far search is our biggest, and then our newsletter drives a lot. So our goal is to get people who come from search onto our newsletter so that they'll be repeat visitors, right? Because unless they have two problems that we rank well for, they're not coming back. And so It's more likely if we can get them on our list that we can get them to come back with interesting content. We're trying to get better at like building our list in a way that we know what their pain points are, where they're at in their business. So that's helping a little bit. We're doing a few things to really beef up the email list and that kind of thing. But yeah, for sure, search and our email list are the two biggest.
I like it. So what do you guys do as far as like deciding on which topics to write about? So you mentioned that you'll take inspiration from readers or, you know, Answering reader questions. What else do you guys do? Do you do keyword research? What's kind of the process?
Yeah, we have done a ton of different things in the past. So we have a mastermind group, we call it, on Facebook. It's a free Facebook group. And so if we see something sort of repeatedly come up through there, or there's a, you know, you can ask a question when people join the group. If there's a repeated theme through there that we've not covered in depth enough, we'll create content around that. We also have a really great group of contributors who are freelancers themselves or solopreneurs themselves. And so every day they're coming across things that they're having trouble with or that they've done well. And then they're offering to write on those subjects, which, you know, is a little less like guided by what we need, but it's a great way to build community because people are sharing their stories and their successes and their failures and that kind of thing. And then the third way, which like I said, we're really investing a lot more in now, especially over the last, I'd say like 3 to 6 months, is keyword research and figuring out how we can help people who are like searching with a genuine problem related to freelancing or solopreneurship or small business. But that's still like a small percentage of our content. I'd like it to probably be half or more eventually, but we're getting there.
I like it. Small steps.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
All right, Preston. Well, what would be your number one piece of advice to our audience here today that wants to build a profitable blog of their own? What should they focus most on?
I would say focus on actually treating your blog like a business. Particularly because now if your blog is an experiment or a hobby or just a fun thing you want to do, that's fine. I assume you're listening to this because you're a little more serious about it. You want it to be some sort of business or revenue generating, you know, a side hustle or whatever. If you're in that group where you want it to actually make money, you have to think about it like a business, which sounds so obvious. But it can be so easy to get hung up in the how many times a week should I post and what should I write about and how long should it be and is my logo the right size and are my colors good and does it look good on mobile and like all these things in regards to the design and look of your blog or the copywriting, which are all, don't get me wrong, are all important. But it can be so easy to get caught up in all that instead of focusing on the things that actually drive revenue. And you don't have to sell out to care about revenue. Right? If you're running a business, like that's what running a business is. If not, you're running a hobby or you're just sort of experimenting. So I'd say treat your blog like a business. And the day I started treating it like a business, like something that I wanted to actually make money from instead of just a fun hobby that also made money, like there's a difference. It's a fine line. But the day I started treating it like something that our goal was, in addition to serving, to also make money, everything changed for the business when I had that little mind shift. So
I second that wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Same experience here. The day I started giving real attention to it and treating it like a business, everything started to change.
Yeah. You make completely different decisions, not bad decisions. You don't, like I said, you don't sell out. It's not like you're, you prioritize differently, you spend your time differently, spend your resources differently, you have focuses in different places. And I'm not perfect at it. I've come back. I mean, you know, we have 3 different podcasts. Do they all make a ton of money? No, but they're fun. So there's also like that element of it. So I'll readily admit, like, I'm not perfect at it. I still like the fact that I can do things just for fun sometimes. But if you really want it to be a business that can support you, you have to think of it like a business.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So Preston, the last question I have for you, you know, we had you here on the show about a year ago. So between that time last year and this year, what would you say has been the best investment you've decided to make in your business?
Man, you're going to hate me because this was my answer last time. Something about the best investment in my business last time, my answer was the people, and it still has been. I've been able to, in the last year, I've been able to pay my people more and find more people to help and be able to pay them as well. And so the best investment hands down that I've ever made in my company ever has been the people. I couldn't do what we do at Millo, the scale of what we do and the quality particularly of what we do. I couldn't do it by myself. And in fact, I don't want to do it by myself. I love that Millo is a place with lots of different voices and opinions, and that takes a team to make it happen. So that's by far the best investment so far. Now, can I just caveat that real quick? I wouldn't say, like, if you're just starting or if you're maybe a year into blogging, I'm not sure like the best investment you can make right now is to hire someone, although it may be. But I would say the best investment is spending money in places that get more time and energy back on your plate. So whether you build systems or use software like Zapier or any number of things that sort of free up more of your time, particularly if you're a side hustler or if you're, I don't know, if you're just short on time, if you have a family or you're in school or whatever, if you're short on time, the best investment you can make is to say, how can I take certain things off my plate? Either don't do them or have, you know, a system do them or someone on Fiverr do them, or like who or what can I find to free up some of my time? That would be the best investment you can make, because then you're able to open your mind to new possibilities for your business and find new ways to generate revenue and traffic, build audience and serve your audience, all because you now have, instead of like frantically trying to do everything yourself, you now have a little bit of extra spare time to really focus on those more innovative things that really drive a company forward.
So I want to touch on what you just said, you know, do things, spend money on things that buy you more time. Because this is something that has been really hard for me to do traditionally with my blog. Yeah. But this year I've like really turned a corner as far as like, you know, up until this year, every single thing I published on my blog from like start to finish was written by me, like every single word, right?
Yeah.
And the moment I decided to start outsourcing first drafts, right? So I would still outline a blog post, but then I would take that outline and now I'm giving them to writers to do the first drafts. And then they come back to me with, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 words already written. That takes like 20 hours out of my writing process.
So
and
much
then I'm
time.
Only spending, you know, 5 hours as an editor going in, adding my own stories, case studies. Yep. But these are the difficult things where, like, you know, I love the writing so much, but taking just a half step out of it and being more of an editor has helped me publish 3 times as much content this year.
Yeah. And like I say, like, I think that's the perfect example, because if you're a writer, then you write at the expense of your business. But if you're an entrepreneur and if your blog is about being a business, then you have to sometimes sacrifice the art of it, meaning your personal direct participation in the art of it, not the quality. You don't have to sacrifice any of that, but your direct, you know, you sitting down at a canvas and painting, whatever that is for you, writing, taking pictures, writing recipes, cooking, whatever, like whatever your blog is about, you have to sometimes not do as much of that fun stuff because you're running a business. And if you'd rather do the fun stuff on the side and keep your day job. But if you want it to be like a full-time business, you have to start finding ways to free up some of that time.
I feel like this is the start of a completely new conversation that we're going to have in a
we'll have to have, yeah.
episode.
That sounds
well,
good.
Preston, thank you for joining us. Can you tell everyone listening where they can go learn more about you, Millo, and everything you guys are up to?
Yeah, of course. You can go to Millo.co. That's Millo.co. Also, because this is an audio video experience, I'd say probably people love podcasts who are listening to this. Ryan, you and I co-host with Ian Padgett a podcast called Side Gig, which you can find at Millo as well. We have two other podcasts. One is called My Freelance Life, which is like a weekly check-in with Andy, who quit his job just to start freelancing full-time, and it's a really fun podcast. And then our top listen to podcast is called Freelance to Founder. We tell narrative stories of people who started as freelancers or solopreneurs and then scaled to be bigger than just themselves. So that's really fun as well. You can find all of those at millo.co/podcasts. So it's millo.co/podcast. Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that.
Beautiful. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.